Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain from the track.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Not as always. I believe I missed the show last week, so
you did, but that's my catch line. If I don't hit the line, I think people get freaked out.
Well, that's fair. I felt like we were betraying people. We were, you know, far be it for me to break kayfabe, but breaking kayfabe.
Yeah, we had BQ was on last week. And we did probably for our YouTube specifically, it was our second highest rated show we've ever done, watch hours we've ever done.
Great, and, without me, fantastic.
Well, it was really because BQ came on and he had some TNA scoops that nobody else had, and so that was really cool, man. He actually did us a solid by not saving that for his own podcast. He dropped that shit here with us, so. I was real happy and real thankful for BQ for doing that for us, man. We actually got a lot of subscribers over the last week just because BQ just showed up. So thank you, BQ, sir. That was a great honor. But, man, you've had an exciting couple of weeks, dude. Gaijin kicking ass.
Gaijin doing pretty good. I got the proof right here for Gaijin. It's printed. It's done, kind of. So, yeah, we've launched the Kickstarter. I launched the Kickstarter last Tuesday. So... we have, let me double check how many days I have left. I think 23. It's hard when you have the computers. And yeah, 22 days left of the campaign to go. And it's going solid, man. We are 222% of the way funded. We're over halfway toward our first, we're over three quarters of the way toward our first stretch goal. We're about a little over halfway toward the final stretch goal. So yeah, man, this is, I haven't really got a chance to get into it on our show. Right. This is my new novel, Gaijin, which I think is very appealing to people who listen to shows like this. It's a story of an American pro wrestler who kind of gets a second chance in Japan, where he inadvertently runs afoul of the Yakuza. Right. He becomes a Yakuza enemy and inadvertently becomes a drug kingpin, he's smuggling amphetamine into Japan, which is a big no-no. It's a country with very, very harsh drug laws.
They don't mess around in Japan when it comes to that stuff.
They do not mess around in Japan, which is a source of conflict and drama in the story. What makes this book different than a typical thriller is that it's set, of course, in the world of Japanese pro wrestling, and it's set against the background of a G1 style tournament, right, where our lead character, he's hired on to be like the spoiler role in the tournament, right? And he's a villain. And what I like about this story is it starts off with our main character. His name's Matt Bradley. He's a dude who's just in over his head and he's just trying to find his way. And then slowly over time, he becomes a complete and total piece of shit to the point where he's damn near redeemable at the end. Meanwhile, his character in the kayfabe, because we do the kayfabe world, right? We play it off like it's legit. His character goes from being this dastardly heel to becoming a beloved babyface. So the two characters kind of do a 180 on each other, and I'm pretty happy with that. Sam, our friend Sam Shipman from Power Bombshells, read it, and she texted me immediately after she finished the book, going, "How could you end this like this? How could you do this?" And I was just so proud because I'm like, all right, I got it. It worked. My ending worked. I stuck the landing. So yeah, that was really cool. What's cool about the Kickstarter is that it's not only the book, not only can you get the book, but I did the program for the tournament. right? So we have the brackets. I'm going to put the brackets out on my Kickstarter next week, so you can actually see like how it shapes up. You know, it's a G1 style round robin tournament. So I was able to create the brackets and little, like I ripped off the official handbook of the Marvel Universe where I did the entries for everybody. You learn about their careers. I had an artist like draw mock-ups of what they would look like. So, I mean, it's really, it's a fun little thing. And you can get this book in either ebook, paperback, hardcover, or audiobook, right? And then all my other books are able to at a discounted rate. So if you ever wanted to check out The World According to JD, the Kickstarter is the best place to do it. And I'm super thrilled with this. You read the book. You're one of the few people yes. that have actually read it. I got Mike to read a book. I'm super proud of myself on that.
The last two books, the only two books since I've been out of school that I've read that were that are fiction were both written by JD Oliva. I read Gaijin, and I also read Deluge, which also had a pretty bizarre and pretty badass ending. So I really enjoyed it. I like how you weave the world of real life and kayfabe life. I think you paint the picture beautifully. I think it's awesome the dichotomy of, you know, Matt Bradley versus the Black Phoenix, like the differences between the real person and the character. And I also like, as a guy that lived in Japan and that once did almost run afoul of the Yakuza himself, I think I've told that story on Brace for Impact.
One of my favorites. Perhaps we should do that again someday. I like that one.
Yeah. That was a good story. I plan on going back to Japan before I end up getting out of the military. So I'm like, I don't know if I want to keep telling that story. They're going to remember that. I just love the book so much, and I threw down and got myself an ebook. Even though it's an ebook, I want your digital signature on it somehow. We just need to do that. Like, I can get a
figure that out. I think I could figure that out. I'm pretty slick. I'm good at Photoshop. Yeah. I'm proud of this book, dude. I think it's the best book I ever wrote. John Muse actually helped me book the tournament in the story.
Yes. I mean, if you needed even more of a reason, John Muse is one of the helpers on the book. I don't want to call him a co-writer, but like a contributor to the book. Absolutely.
When I was because I was originally going to do this book with DC Comics back in the day, like one of their editors kind of shepherded me and helped me put together the pitch for this thing. And then it just didn't work out. Like, they kind of shuttered their Vertigo imprint, and I was one of the victims of that. So, which is good. It wound up being my story. It wound up growing and changing with me, which is awesome. When I was ready to do it, I texted John. I'm like, all right, man, we got to talk. Help me book a tournament, because I have an idea. I can write a book, but like writing wrestling is totally different. So, I mean, he really helped me put that together. He put in a lot of the twists of the tournament were his idea. And I'm like, ooh, that's good. So, and it was really gave me an opportunity. When he told me that, it really gave me ideas of how I can parallel that in the book. Right. So, I mean, John was a massive help on this. So this is definitely something I'm proud of, man. Like I said, it's the best book I've ever written. And a lot of our good buddies in the chat have already jumped in and backed, and I can't thank them enough. And if you're listening to the show, man, I hope you can jump on. We got 22 days left of the campaign, and then ain't going to be a whole lot of waiting, because the thing is already done.
Yeah.
Right. You just gotta, I'm just trying to make a big deal about putting the book out, and then you're going to get it pretty quick.
Cool, man. You also got something exciting happening on our Patreon. You're going to be releasing Bit by Bit, a short story that you just wrote. And it is, if you're into the Mike and JD show lore, there is a pivotal character that really kind of brought us together that it has an idea in this book. Why don't you tell everybody about this?
So I'm writing another short story now. It's, most of the stuff that I write is like supernatural thriller stuff. Behind me, you can see the cover, the painted cover of my first book, Harvest Moon. And that's kind of my thing. But Gaijin is totally like just a straight up, you know, gritty noir thriller. I titled this little short story, Killing the Town. I totally stole it from one Don Callis. And it's about a character who shows up. It's in the 80s. It's in wrestling territory in the 80s where, a guy, you know, down on his luck, it's another down on his luck guy. He gets an opportunity in basically Calgary, and they're doing one of those, like they call them the Northern Death Tours, where they're, you know, touring the native reserves up there, and the bus breaks down, and they're trapped in the tundra with the Wendigo. So that's, you know, one of my stories. And I put the first chapter out there, and I'm going to just, you know, little by little, I've never done it this way. I'm writing this book along with people. So you're going to get instant see like kind of how the process of making a book goes. So yeah, put a little bit out, a little bit here and a little bit there on the Patreon. I put a cool cover together. Pretty proud of that. So
yeah, that was an awesome cover. I really enjoyed the artwork for it. So yeah, it's good stuff. If you're a Patreon subscriber, if not, hey, go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. We don't just crank out like wrestling podcasts. We do a, you know, some other kind of off the wall stuff. Let me get to the chat real quick, and then we'll get to the wrestling news. Yeah, King of the North says, I've heard this Gaijin is a real true life story about JD himself.
I wish I was that cool.
Yeah. No, JD has never smuggled a meth, nor has he ever ran into the Yakuza. I have ran into the Yakuza, and they pulled a gun on a guy I know. So, but everybody lives, so that's good news. The Yakuza had this bar in Fusa, which is right outside of Tokyo. And they were across from this bar called Eddie's Bar. And Eddie was this Japanese guy, but he's like very like into American culture. Like always played American music. He had these black sunglasses on and this leather jacket, kind of a biker dude. And he loved all the American military guys.
Sounds like Onita, actually.
honestly, yes. That is a very good, like, if I didn't know who Onita was back then when I lived there, but now that I know exactly that very much a good description, like a good comparator is Onita. Picture Onita, right, smoking a cigarette outside of a bar with some shades on, no matter what, like, whether it's day or night, brother's got some shades on and a leather jacket, hanging outside of the bar and welcoming American military guys into his bar. But yeah, he ran that bar that we'd always go to. And then right across the street was a Yakuza bar, and they always told us to stay away from there. But one day I was like, you know, I just thought that they would like me, which is typically like, that's how I get in trouble. It's like, I assume that people like me when they really don't. And like, I just like, you know, I'm a charming motherfucker. Let me just walk over there and sweet talk them so I can go check out their bar. And they were like, you know, pretty upset at me. And, told me to get the hell out of there. I did not do like the Akebono thing where I cussed at them. That did not happen. But another guy that I was with decided to, you know, not be so nice. And like later in the evening, I guess they caught him outside and they chased him off and shot at him. But he ended up being okay.
So, yeah. My favorite Mike Gilbert stories involve you assuming everybody loves you.
Yes, like, well, it's like me being shit-faced and it's like, you know what? These people love me. Like, why? You know, why don't I just go over there and because they naturally would want to be my friend, but of course they did not. You know, there's a lot of reasons why I don't drink, and that, you know, almost getting shot up by the Yakuza would be one of those reasons. Yeah,
definitely on the list. I love the fact that you just assume everybody loves you and I just assume people hate me and go on and go yeah. off that assumption and move from there.
Yeah.
So, oh man.
Yeah, DJ Convoy, a friend of the show, day one friend of the show, Patreon sure. subscriber, said he enjoyed part one of Killing the Town thank very you. Much, so thank you. And Gerard, big new distribution deal, Gerard. He is in the chat. He is holding out hope for that TNA deal. One day, Gerard, one day. And then maybe. Dan Goucher, Mike Tozawa, good evening. Oh, yeah, you got your headband on.
Oh, like, I got my Tozawa. Headband on. I don't. Yeah, yeah. It's become such a part of me again that I don't even think about not wearing it anymore. I've worn it every day for 2 months. Not the same headband, just a headband.
Yeah. Hey, so where I want to get started with, you know, the wrestling news tonight is, you know, I watched Dynamite this morning. I was able to finish it this morning. I caught a little bit last night, and then I got up early this morning and finished it. Man, I thought it was a much better show than I've seen probably the last month.
Oh yeah,
like, I know. A few weeks ago, whenever they had that gauntlet match, that was probably the best match I had seen on television in years. But I felt like the overall show wasn't that great. But that match specifically was pretty Agreed. Awesome. I thought last night, aside from a couple of segments that were pretty cringe, for the most part, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a hell of a show. I really liked the segment between Will Ospreay and between Will Ospreay and Swerve. Sorry, Mike. My light decided to fall. Will Ospreay and Swerve. I thought that was fantastic. Just a really fun show, man. AEW needed a week like this, and I think they got it.
No, I agree. I think it's the best Dynamite they've had in months, like top to bottom. It wasn't perfect by 2024 standards. One of the better Dynamites of the year, to be quite frank. Yeah, DJ Convoy is his best one in ages. I agree. And we have a group there with Muse, and I was texting during the Ospreay Swerve segment. I'm like, oh my god, this is great. Ospreay's promo here is just unreal. And then Swerve, just like, I know our boss Joe Lanza in his review said is the best Swerve promo ever. I I can't argue with that one.
Bit. I don't disagree with that because I've been watching Swerve since he was on Lucha Underground and MLW.
Mm-hmm,
and I've never seen him that good before. And I've been a big fan of his for years, but that was the best promo I've ever seen him do. Absolutely.
Dude, the line of the night was, while you were in Hit Row, I had a hit list. I was like, no, that's why wrestling. Now that's what, and again, I got between that and the MJF Rush match, which some people didn't love it. I thought it was great. Yeah. I love the intensity of those two. Like, both those guys are so freaking intense that I want more of it. And based on the fact that we saw the aforementioned Don Callis with Rush later in the show, leads me to believe they're going to keep doing some of them. I loved it. I was like, this is what I want from wrestling. Like, this felt like the more we can lean away from, and again, they lean too into WWE points, but the more they can lean away from it and do their own thing, the better off they are just constantly. Like, that promo segment, it was just two dudes talking, and I feel like there's real stakes now. And Swerve, I know Swerve's a babyface now, but he's so good at being a prick, you know?
Yeah.
He's just so good at, like, oh, say hi to Harry for me. Like, that's his kid, man. Oh, vicious.
Well, that is very much like gamesmanship, like a guy just trying to one-up his opponent and get into his head. Part of, I don't even see that as being like a heel move. That is just like, you would see that in MMA. Like that's like a boxing thing to do, just to get into your opponent's head a little bit. And that's what, like, now the match has a big fight feel.
Mm-hmm.
When I did not feel like it did before. Now, that doesn't mean I wasn't interested in it. I was, but it's like, you know, babyface match. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, two guys going out there kicking out of shit. Should be fun, but who really cares? Now I care because there's a little bit of a personal issue. I found it to be refreshing. This is exactly what I want pro wrestling to be when I envision it. It's two bad motherfuckers that don't like each other, and they're fighting for a cause, and that cause is the World Heavyweight Championship. And now you added the added stipulation that now Will Ospreay wants to take that belt into Wembley as the World Heavyweight Champion. Now you got a second cause on top of that. I found it to be beautiful.
We talk about story in wrestling a lot. I go off on this, right? What is a story? People go, they don't tell stories. I don't tell stories. A story is you have a character, a protagonist, who has a goal. Something is standing in the way of his goal. That is the story, the journey toward the goal. And we have that. We have two protagonists. Will Ospreay wants to be the champion going into his home country. Swerve wants to prove that he is not a fluke and he is the champion. Boom, you've got these two trains colliding into each other. And now you have the basis for what can be a really good story. Now everything that happens in there is the beats, right? The story beats is where things get strong, where they fall apart, right? It's all about the beats on the way. But the story itself is there. The nuts and bolts are there. And what I love is we didn't need the mystical murder rabbit to get us there.
Yeah, you know, and with WWE kind of going hard into the other direction, which we thought for a long time they're getting away from, now they've just steered back into it with the Wyatt Six. And look, if you're a Wyatt Six fan, like, have fun, right? Enjoy it. What I like is what Will Ospreay and Swerve did. What I like is MJF versus Rush. If you like, you know, what Bo Dallas and those cats were doing, hey, more power to you. Enjoy yourself. I just, not exactly for me. I don't completely hate it. Like, I like some hokey shit in wrestling sometimes. If it makes me laugh, I'm good with it. If I don't have to take it, if you're making me take it seriously, not really my cup of tea. But they need to completely steer totally away from it. And I felt like they did that with that segment. But Dan Goucher has a good comment in here, and I think is actually he's right. So the contract signings. So he's talking about Mina Shirakawa and Tony Storm was. Every WWE contract, well, it's been every contract signing in pro wrestling for 50 years. The WWE didn't start it. They just kind of popularized it. I'll be honest. I lasted about 3 minutes in that contract signing and I just fast forwarded because I was watching on delay. So, but people like that, go for it.
I'm a Mina Shirakawa fan, sir. So I was watching that segment. So when it comes to the contract, I think that, I don't hate the idea of a contract signing. I think it can be cool. I like the idea behind it. I just think they need to do it differently. Like, what I would like to see is I like to see a contract signing done maybe at an event, maybe like in the city where it's going to be. Give me some live shots there. Have them fight like on a dais, right? In front of at a press conference. Do something have it signed at like a baseball game or something like that. Do it, like, take it out of the ring. Do something different with it. right? Make it interesting. Just don't, I mean, we got Peppermint in there, so she's going to lean into everything Vince taught her, right? And we got Jimmy Jacobs there. He's going to do things that are just stupid because he has no real vision.
RD Evans is now there.
Yeah. Like, you've got guys who aren't original thinkers. So, I mean, the more you can challenge people by having original thinkers in there, I don't hate the concept of the contract signing on its own. What I hate is that it's so tropey, right? Yeah. And I think you have to challenge tropes. I think at some point someone has to say, is this different? And then go off and like, and if the answer is no, then really think about whether or not you need that segment, right? Could they have done that segment differently? Yes. Could they have, if they'd have done it on the stage as opposed to in the ring, it would have been different in and of itself. I think you can do these things. You just have to challenge yourself and do them in a different place and do them where someone doesn't go through the table, right? Yes. How many times do we see a contract signing where someone goes through a table? Every fucking time. Like, challenge yourself, man. Be different. So as good a Dynamite as this was, we still lean too heavy into tropiness, right? Challenge trope. I'll tell you something. This is a take I haven't seen anywhere. This is my take. One thing that I have always hated in wrestling is the invisible cameraman, right? Where you have two dudes that are having a conversation and there just happens to be a cameraman there.
Yeah.
TNA always motivated it by having like the spy cameraman. Like, they shot it like reality TV where like the cameraman's kind of like spying on
one of Bischoff's only good ideas in TNA, by the way.
I agree with that. Eric's stupid. He doesn't have all bad ideas, but TNA still does that. At least they were doing it last time. So I watched TNA,
yeah,
but they still have that. So, but WWE always has the mysterious floating camera guy who we have to pretend isn't there. Samoa Joe and Hook had a similar segment where they were going to see the premier athletes. I can't remember what Mark Sterling's crew is called. And it was very much that segment until you realize Shibata was working the camera.
Yeah.
And then I went, oh shit, we spun the trope.
Yeah.
We challenged the trope. We had it. It was a very tropey segment until it wasn't. Just by hearing, you have to see Shibata. They've motivated that voice, right? That Siri voice is him. That's how Shibata cuts promos. So just hearing that, even if he wasn't in the building, they have told you as a viewer that Shibata was the cameraman. Now we've taken a WWE segment, challenged it and done it something new with it. That was actually one of my favorite segments because it was different.
What are the chances that Shibata wasn't even there?
50-50.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a real possibility that he just wasn't there, but that was their way of including him into the segment, even though he wasn't there. Did they tape Collision tonight?
I think so.
So maybe he just wasn't in town yet. Like, or maybe he was on to the next town, I think they're doing that match tonight. They did that match to the tapings tonight, I think.
If all you're going to do is have his voice, you don't have to fly him in. Save yourself $100 on a plane ticket and let Shibata hang out with his family at home. Like, and again, they motivated it. They motivated the invisible cameraman. I can't tell you how much I appreciated a little thing like that. Like, I have a hunch that was Will Washington, because that had outsider thinking written all over it. And I just, one of my favorite things on the show last night.
Yeah. Kudos to them. I really dig it. So one of the other things I wanted to get, actually, Io has a good comment in here, and I wanted to get your thoughts. Just want to respect Jeff Jarrett. If he wants to be in the Owen Cup to honor No Biggie, that was his best friend. So there are people shitting on the idea of the fact that Jeff Jarrett's in the Owen Cup because he is not a contender for the title. So in sports context, I get that. However, the only guy in that company specifically that has a legitimate connection to Owen Hart Christian Cage and Edge do too, or Adam Copeland, sorry. Because the very last match in Owen Hart's career was Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett versus Edge and Christian. That was the night before he died. But Jarrett has a connection to Owen. It makes perfect sense that he's in the tournament. Could there have been other bigger name stars? Of course, but this is what they did. But I love the fact that Jarrett's included.
No, I think it had to happen. Like, if you're under the age of 25 and have no perception of pro wrestling history, I don't listen to your opinion. I just don't, because you can't understand it. Like, if you weren't a fan in 1999, 25 years ago when Owen Hart died, like, we just passed the 25th anniversary, right? And watching one of the most uncomfortable episodes of Raw ever, where you have all these people battling trauma and you're forcing them to be on TV and cut live promos. Jeff Jarrett's was I'll never forget how hard it was to watch Jeff Jarrett's promo.
Yeah.
And how much pain he was in having watched his best friend die before him, you know? Yeah. So if, and I think this is one of the most brilliant things Tony's ever done, is you put Jeff in the tournament. He's against the wild card, so he doesn't have to win, right? He can just go and represent that, and he's Jeff Jarrett, so he's going to Memphis the shit out of it, and it'll be entertaining for a segment. Yeah. And it's great, to be honest with you. It's absolutely great. And if you don't appreciate history of pro wrestling, I don't take you seriously.
Yeah, you know, same here. I look, you can say whatever you want about Jeff Jarrett's wrestling ability. The guy's in his 50s. And all his matches typically end up being the same way, but I, you know what? He's entertaining to me. I find him to be a refreshing performer this day and age, because what he does is so much different than what everybody else is doing. I really dig what Jeff Jarrett's doing right now. I'll be honest, in the mid 2000s, I was not digging what Jeff Jarrett was doing. I did not like Jeff Jarrett as the TNA champion. I didn't.
Because it was bad. It was not good.
Yeah. It wasn't good, but I like what he's doing right now. And also, like, I am a fan of Jarrett's podcast. That's the only podcast with Conrad I can listen to now, is the Jarrett one, because I feel like Jarrett tells the truth, which is a difficult thing to do when you're on the ad-free show network. And the objective is to lie. Mm-hmm. The objective is to create grifting opinions that you don't really have in order to get clicks and ad revenue and subscriptions. Well, Jeff Jarrett, because of his sobriety, and I have that in common with him, he doesn't have that in him, so he doesn't do it. Even though at times Conrad tries to push him in that direction, you could tell that he just doesn't want to go in that direction. So, well, on his podcast, he said that he had PTSD because of that. And I totally get it. I understand it. I completely get it. So if this is a healing moment for him, more power to him. And, God bless you, Tony Khan, for doing that. So what do you think about the rest of the tournament bracket, man?
It's okay. I mean, like, I know people had like higher aspirations of it, and unfortunately, a lot of these Owens never quite are as good as we hoped. I mean, you have Bryan Danielson and Shingo Takagi in the first round. I thought that was pretty cool. Pac and Claudio, that was a really good match last night. Like, it's fine. I wish these were bigger. I wish these were 16 man brackets instead of 8 man brackets. I think you could have some freedom to do some more stuff. I saw, like, not to pick on Zach Haydorn, but he was like real upset that like Moxley's on a tournament. Like, well, Moxley's the IWGP champion right now, man. He's kind of busy. He was like, what about Ospreay? I said, Ospreay's got the shot. Why is he in a tournament for a shot at the title when he's already got the shot at the title? What sense does that make? I mean, Okada would have been fine if Okada was
there. Yeah, I think Okada and Joe probably should have been in the tournament. That would make it. And MJF as well.
Okay, MJF hasn't been in the company for 6 months. He had his first match last night. So I can get on board with not using him in a sports sense.
Well, but he's still the former world champion.
I'm with you on that. But I mean,
If they would have added him, I think that, you know, just star power alone would have added an element. But I'm looking at the brackets, and it's very much like these guys are all going to have really good matches. You know what I mean? And I think it's very much designed for Bryan Danielson to get the victory and then head to All In. Like, kind of not his swan song, because I do think he's going to be there for the Tacoma Dome show coming up later this year, but it's probably going to be his last opportunity at the AEW World Championship as he heads off into the sunset for a while.
Do you have him win it?
I have Bryan Danielson winning it. Yeah, who else could win it?
No, I mean, okay, no, that's what I meant. Let's say Bryan wins the Owen, right? And he gets the shot at All In. Do you have him win it? Do you have Bryan win the title?
If you have him win the title and he agrees to drop it back to Swerve in Tacoma, yeah.
I think that's what you do too.
Yeah, I think that makes Swerve a bigger star.
I do too.
Yeah. And I think it elevates that title to be even more important, because you have one of the greatest wrestlers of all time on your list of world champions. I think that means something. And so I don't think losing to Danielson at Wembley hurts Swerve's momentum. I think that he's going to go in and kill it with Will Ospreay coming up. I see him winning that match, and then heading into All In. I think, if Danielson sticks around a little bit longer and he's willing to put over Swerve in Tacoma, I think that's the move.
Yeah, I think that's the most interesting you can do right now, because I do think you could have a moment with Danielson winning in Wembley, right? I think Danielson could be a nice draw with making sure you get asses in the seats in Wembley, which it's not a big problem yet, but I mean, like, I think they're tapped out at 40 right now, so you're like 40-ish, so you need to get another 30,000 people in that arena, right? So yeah. I think having Bryan Danielson's last hurrah or Bryan Danielson's last triumphant run at the title and having him win in front of that crowd would do something. And then in Washington, both their home states, you having Danielson pass a torch, so to say, to Swerve, I think would be a great thing. That's what I, if I'm booking, which I'm not, I'd do that.
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, that, I think that's the smart money. And then I do like the idea of Will Ospreay and MJF in the co-main position there. I mean, you could even have them headlining if you wanted to. You can have one open the show and the other one headlining if you wanted. But I do like that matchup, and they teased it last night on Dynamite.
So here's the thing, though. So we got set up. Yeah, exactly. We got the setup in Dynamite. I think Ospreay MJF is probably your B match. You're not saying a B match, but your 1A match for the show, because that's the other big match the company can offer right now. And then, you know, you can set stuff up for the future. I think that we still got some good matches possibility in this company we haven't seen yet. I mean, like, the talent in this company is an embarrassment of riches. We just need to get things moving. I think story-wise, undercard stuff really doesn't matter all that much. But I mean, I think for main event stuff, I think we're moving in a good position in the company.
Yeah, because I felt like Swerve was a bit cold after he won that title, you know? And I didn't think that Christian Cage was a good first opponent, but they were able to heat it. I'm going to get to the comment. Don't worry about it. I didn't think that Christian Cage was a good first opponent, but they ended up making me interested in the feud heading into the match. And I think coming out of it, Swerve has been, has looked like a much bigger star. And I felt like his promo this week on Dynamite has been really helpful to him. And then getting a win over Ospreay at Forbidden Door would be awesome. And then now Ospreay, you know, has a setback and he sets his sights on Wembley next year. Now, I don't know that there's going to be a Wembley next year. He might have his sights set on Wembley Arena next year, not Wembley Stadium.
Tony Khan is going to want to put people in that seat in Wembley to prove himself. And billionaire, there's one thing I'd say about billionaires, it's that they will swing their wang until they prove that they know better than you. So I think we got at least one more year at Wembley Stadium, not Wembley Arena.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. Now let me get to this Godzilla. First he says, support Gaijin. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Appreciate
you. And then he goes, JD and Mike looking like they're in the gender reveal rooms.
it's funny too, is Mike's got a daughter and I have a son, so it kind of works perfect.
It does, but I have a son on the way and I'm actually in his nursery, but I use the pinkish light because my daughter picked it. she liked that color the best, and I feel like it offsets JD. Mm-hmm. And I have we have the red background, so I was like, oh, I don't want to go red because I'll blend too much into the background. So I swished it up. It's like kind of a pinkish magenta.
Dude, it plays perfectly off each other. But Ella's comment had to be read out loud. I do almost DJ saying Conrad in his circle of me too. I like the DJ Convoy's got a nice little comment. Ha ha, Conrad in his circus of dorks. I agree with that. I tweeted out something the other day. It was a little controversial. I said Conrad has done some real damage to wrestling fandom and feeding into the tribalism and the idiots. And I kind of stand by that.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, I know it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero. You have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. and Arena Club. More than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club Slab Packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. You get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a good segue. I happen to completely agree with you. And this is coming from a guy that was a fan of Conrad early on.
Me too.
I liked the show with Bruce Pritchard. In fact, the very first thing I ever did on a podcast was interview Conrad Thompson. He was on the Wrestling Observer message board, and he and I became friendly because I was a frequent commenter in the Something to Wrestle With thread in there. And he would comment in there all the time. I DM'd him one time, said, "Hey, I've been doing podcasting for a while." I had not. And I was like, "I'd love to have you on my show, man. It's kind of a throw. I just invented a show." And then he was gracious enough to call me, and we did like an hour together.
Wow.
And he didn't know me from Adam, and I didn't even have a real podcast. I made the whole thing up, but then I was able to put it on a show. And I created my first podcast, the Podcast Express, because of that interview. So, that was really cool of him to do. But he absolutely feeds into the negativity because he doesn't care. It makes him money. Mm-hmm. He likes the tribalism because he can profit off of it. And he likes to try to discredit Dave Meltzer. But then he's like, I'm a longtime subscriber. I don't have anything against Dave. And then, but here, what do you think about this? And he's lining them up and setting them up to go ahead and try to do this big takedown. When in reality, before Bischoff got that podcast, 83 Weeks, him and Dave were friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he used to do Dave's show. They talked all the time. In fact, you know, John Muse came here and told the story, but he reached out to Dave to get advice on creative. And then that's how John Muse got connected with Eric Bischoff to go and work for the WCW relaunch. The mm-hmm. fact of the matter is here's the reason why I call Eric Bischoff a grifter. People are like, "You're using that out of context." I'm like, no, I'm not. Because a grifter, right? It's like people say, "Well, grifters are guys that they say they're giving you one thing, but they're not, and they're ripping you off." Mm. That's kind of what he's doing, because he's creating fake opinions to be able to get you guys, to trigger you guys to have an emotion, so that way you will consume. You'll consume the product. You'll click the links. You'll subscribe. You'll pay for the like. He's full of shit, and you guys are falling for it. So he absolutely is a grifter.
Conrad's a grifter. He comes out here and he acts like, that's why guys like us listened to him back in 2016 when his podcast launched. He acted like one of us. "Well, golly gee, I'm a Wrestling Observer subscriber, and I've been a wrestling fan for this long, and I'm just a humble old Southern boy who likes his wrestling," and he's a fucking millionaire.
Yeah.
Right. And his whole podcast empire is just a grift to get people to buy mortgages.
Yes.
That's all it is.
It almost worked on me. I almost, because they said they can get you the lowest interest rate. So I called them before I bought my last house. I didn't end up going with them because he did not actually get me a lower interest rate. And in fact, because I'm in California, they didn't service California. They were going to basically connect me with somebody that would, and they would get a cut of the money. I was like, "Well, no, I'll just go with the person my realtor wanted me to go with in the first place." So I did that. So, But I did call them. I almost got a mortgage from Conrad.
When he got that interview with Jim Crockett Jr. before he died, I'm like, I have to hear this. I'm a student of history. It was $30 to listen to an interview with an old man who's almost senile.
Did you ever end up hearing it?
No, I'm a cheap ass. I wasn't going to pay $30.
I'll send it to you.
That's why I like my. I should have just came to you in the first place.
Why didn't you just ask? You know, I got it.
I didn't even think about it. I should have, because we had a podcast at the time. I don't know why I didn't think about it. But yeah, like, that's the thing, though, is he is the king grifter because he acts like us. Well, I'm just like you guys. I'm a fan. And then it's just you feed the negativity. Like, if you ever want to see the biggest truck, and I've just gotten to the point where, like, I'm so fed up with Twitter, like the idiots on Twitter. I'm calling them out like, you're a fucking dork. Like, the coach was out there doing, Jonathan Coachman was tweeting stupid shit. Like, this guy works for the PFL and he's going to talk about AEW crowds. So I'm just like, all right, you're a fucking dork. And Bix retweeted that. So I was like, oh, good. That just expanded my reach with Bix retweeting me calling Coachman a dork. That made me happy. So I'm just going to keep doing it. Like, and if you look at Dave's tweets, like, you just see the biggest troglodytes on the internet. Right. And they're all so many. If they're under 30, they just have Roman Reigns avatars. If they're over 40, they all listen to ad free shows and Jim Cornette. And at least with Jim Cornette, it's not a grift. That's him.
Like, yeah, I 100% believe that Jim Cornette is not creating fake opinions to get over. I think he's defending his real opinions so much so that he was willing to lose a lot of friends, which is what happened. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't doing it. I feel like Bruce Pritchard and Eric Bischoff specifically created characters for a podcast because they were conned into it by Conrad. Because, hey, if you just trash Dave Meltzer and you trash AEW, well, it's with Bischoff specifically, if you trash AEW, we could actually, that's what the algorithm likes. And you and I both know that for a fact, because our shows where we were pretty tough on AEW and I put on the Tony Khan face thumbnail, they do better than our normal. Like, tonight's episode is us praising AEW. I know for a fact it's not going to do as good in the YouTube clips as it would if we came on and trashed them. But I'm not going to come on here and give a fake opinion because it'll make us money. I'm just not willing to do that. Neither are you.
Well, we got ourselves into some trouble with some of the VOW fan base because, like,
they can kiss my whole ass.
I know. Well, we'll fuck with the algorithm. And Joe defended us. Joe's like, it's a bit that they do. And I'm like, cause it is. And we talked about it beforehand, and like, the proof is in the pudding. When we do that, our numbers are a lot better. When we're hard on AEW, people love that shit. Cause there's nothing people love more than to defend the rape factory. Like, they eat it up. They love it. Oh my God. The mystical murder rabbit's back. Oh my Lord. The dumbest people are going to say the stupidest things for the next 6 months about why this is genius. The fetophiles. God, I got to remember that one. We have a collection.
That's from the Voices of Wrestling Discord. I wish I could remember who said it first. Good one. But I just want to, like, join the Voices of Wrestling Discord. You hear some comedy gold in there. And sometimes I'll steal that gold and say it on this podcast. But it came from the Discord. Please, if somebody knows who said it first, let me know. I'd like to give them credit.
We have a collection here of people who have never even been mid-card and never really been over. But now they're going to wear these dumb fucking masks. And all of a sudden, this is genius. It's so brilliant. They shot Chad Gable in the head. Oh my God. We have redefined wrestling. Like, the way people bend and twist themselves out of shape to defend the dumbest fucking shit. And when WWE was doing this shit, it's when the audiences dwindled the most. Remember when they had Seth Rollins screaming and crying when the magical murder clown was going to get him? They ended a pay-per-view like that and it did terrible. And they weren't selling any tickets, but people, I know Bray Wyatt's gone and it's really sad. It really is. Like, it's a tragic thing that poor guy died. I really think so. But he had terrible ideas. He had terrible ideas.
His early stuff was awesome. I thought the cult leader was great. But then he went into the supernatural spooky. And unless you're playing it for like comedy, because I know the House Hardy stuff early on did some of that stuff. And I thought it was pretty funny.
It's comedy.
But you know, with Bray Wyatt, it was like, you're supposed to like legitimately be scared of that. And it just wasn't working because pro wrestlers are not good actors.
No. And it's also, well, here's the thing too. Like, pro wrestling is really good at doing pro wrestling. Yeah. Nothing can do pro wrestling better than pro wrestling, except for Gaijin, available now on Kickstarter. Like, there's nothing like pro wrestling's great at that. If I want to get scared, I'm going to go watch a horror movie. I just finished the new Stephen King book. There's some stuff in there that's pretty scary. Bray's gone. Bo Dallas wearing a stupid Barry Windham mask is not scary. Alexa Bliss, remember when they were doing that whole thing with him and her and Bray? It was like knocking on the door of some weird little, like, you know,
knocking on the door. I called it out specifically. Yeah. Like, that was, you know, very much. That was some, you know, I heard Drake's into that stuff, apparently, from Kendrick Lamar.
I couldn't think of a good way to say it, and you just nailed it home right there. I didn't want to say the word
if,
that was going
if you
through
guys,
my mind.
Hey, if you guys have not seen Kendrick Lamar's concert on Amazon Prime last night, Drake has to fake his own death now at this point. Like, there is no coming back from it. The entire city of LA hates that motherfucker. And awesome. I couldn't love them more for it. But go
hilarious.
Ahead. Sorry.
It's, no, it's absolutely hilarious. But I mean, why do I want to watch that stuff? Which did not draw. Yeah, they sold some merchandise.
Yeah.
But it didn't sell tickets. It wasn't, the pay-per-views weren't as like doing as well. Like, the company wasn't as strong as it is now. So why are you steering back into it with a bunch of people who've never been over? Oh my God, that's Nikki Cross. Oh my God, Nikki Cross has never been over. Yeah. Oh my God, that's Joe Gacy. Oh my God, Joe Gacy is a CZW reject. Like, who cares? Why do people care about this stuff? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. But yeah, I'm very much a guy that's like what you like. If you enjoy it, have fun, man.
No, you're wrong.
I'm just like, if that's what you enjoy, go have fun. I really don't care, but I am not gonna watch it. It just isn't for me. Like, and it would really take a lot for them to win me over. I like cool masks and wrestling. I just happen to be a fan of masks.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Masks are
you
cool.
Know what I mean? So if they're gonna do that, like if Eric Rowan and Joe Gacy are gonna come out and just be bad motherfuckers, okay. Let me see it. And are the matches good and are the promos good? That's all I really care. That's all I really care about. I don't really care about like this other stuff with them murdering people backstage and the blood and all that. Like, I'm not really into it. And there's a context for everything, because if they did that same thing in Lucha Underground, I'd probably dig it.
Lucha Underground was different.
Mm-hmm. You know, I happen to like I was a big fan of the Hardy stuff in 2016. You know what? But that was TNA. That was a different thing. They were doing it outside of the building. It was a different context. It was, you know, whatever. And it was a kind of a fun thing that set TNA apart. I the Wyatt stuff never really appealed to me outside of the original incarnation of the original three with Eric Rowan, Luke Harper. I wanted to say his WWE name and Bray Wyatt. Outside of that, I just have not been a fan of anything that has ever come out of it.
Are you telling me you didn't like when Randy Orton had to like be scared of like the digitally projected worms on the ring?
No. Or when they went and wrestled in a haunted house.
Oh God. Why are people nostalgic for this stuff? It was so bad. It was.
I can
so
tell you
bad.
Why, JD, and we, and you, and I, and John talked about it earlier this week because of merch. Yeah. It's a ploy to sell toys and T-shirts, and they're gonna sell a ton of toys and T-shirts. Mm-hmm. But they might do that at the risk of losing some of their television and their ticket buying audience. Because once those guys get in the ring, here's the thing that people don't want to discuss: they can't go. I saw Eric Rowan have a couple of good matches in some trios in AEW, and I saw him have a couple good matches with the Wyatt family. But for the most part, man can't go. Bo Dallas, he had a good ladder match back in the day in NXT. Can't go. Nikki Cross. Sorry, she at one point she seemed like she was going to be an up and coming talent. Figured out, couldn't go. Dexter Lumis, Sam Shaw never could go. The guy can't wrestle. Right. Mm-hmm. And Joe Gacy, I've literally never seen a Joe Gacy match. I can't tell you if he can go or not.
No one cares. Like, yeah. And here's what bothers me is everybody bends over so backwards to praise what's going on WWE right now, whether it's good or not. It's just because it's on WWE TV, it's awesome. And what bothers me is that TNA has like sacrificed its own stuff for bad NXT television. What they did to Joe Hendry, like, you got a guy legitimately over in Joe Hendry with your audience, and you taking a guy who should have been a digital media act, and he should be the champion right now, and they bushwhacker luked him.
I couldn't believe it. I legitimately could not believe what happened to Joe Hendry on Wednesday. And I came on Brace for Impact over the weekend, and I basically predicted that Joe Hendry would be in that battle royal. They were teasing it for a while, so it wasn't like a big surprise. He wasn't advertised, but I assumed that he would be there. And I was like, you know what? He'll probably come in. He'll have a great entrance. The people go crazy, which they did. That entrance was insane.
It's great.
The crowd was awesome. The camera was shaking. The building was shaking. They sang along with his song. TNA is very over to the NXT audience, believe it or not. They really are. And NXT is not over to the TNA audience. Because when Tatum Paxley came out for her match with Jordynne Grace, it was utter crickets, and Jordynne Grace beat her in 10 minutes. And it actually was a decent match. I think that Tatum Paxley might have some talent. So that I think
Jordynne can carry people because she's a talented.
But I've seen Jordynne struggle with people that aren't that good before. So I'm not going to say Tatum's completely a bad wrestler. That was the only match I've ever seen her in, to be honest with you. I like, before the match happened, you and I were discussing whether or not she was an actual person. She is a real person. And she happened to have a decent match with Jordynne Grace. But anyway, he comes out. And I get a text, like, I'm at work, and I get a text, and it's like, oh, shit, Joe Hendry's on NXT. I was like, oh, cool, I'll check it out later. And then I get a text 2 minutes later, they fucking eliminated him. And then I got another text, I can't believe what they just did to Joe Hendry. And I'm like, what did they do? And they go, he entered, everybody jumped him, and the Kazarian dumped him out. I was like, you're kidding me, there's no way they're that stupid. But yes, they are. And I know everybody wants to put that heat on NXT, who has some pretty awful booking, but I don't want to absolve TNA from this, because I feel like they're a part of that, because they have to okay that shit. Well, so both of them together made a really bad decision, because, and everybody's like, oh, Mike, he's not completely dead yet. His career is not over yet. He's not dead yet. It doesn't matter if they can rebuild him. They should not have to rebuild him. Stay strong. He is their top babyface, an organic babyface that they didn't have to buy from another fucking company. It's like, remember, the first one that they've ever had a homegrown star in a long time. And what did they do? They geeked him out in a minute in front of the biggest audience he's ever been in front of. It is disgusting.
You want to talk about defining someone down upon the first time? Like, because you're right. I watched it. I saw it. When I heard it, I had to put it on, because I'm like, oh, shit, Joe Hendry on TNXT. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then I saw what they did. I'm like, of course. Like, but look what TNA has been doing with him. They had him job to Frankie at the pay-per-view. No reason for that. Remember when Steve Austin was on the come up and he did a bunch of jobs?
Yeah. The only person that Austin lost to on his come up was Brett.
Yeah.
Like Brett, and or Brett's... Undertaker or Shawn Michaels, but they were like top guys. And look, I think Frankie's a really good wrestler. And I think he does a great job. He has really good matches. He shouldn't be losing to Frankie. And everybody's like, well, Frankie cheated to win. I was like, okay.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Like, and they're like, why are you so upset? And I was like, because they got a guy. They have an opportunity here. He could be their John Cena. Lower level, of course, because TNA doesn't have the reach. But he really could be like a guy for them, like a John Cena, like a Bruno, like Cody. Like, he needs to be the super, like, over baby face that you keep strong at all times. And when he loses, it means something. And he lost to Frankie Kazarian in the middle of a TNA Plus show. And they used the Tito Santana, Macho Man, Randy Savage 1986 finish, where Frankie Kazarian was on the outside of the ropes. He digs into his tights, grabs out the taped metal object, and he swings at Joe Hendry. Hendry ducks. He does the big 180. Joe Hendry picks him up for a back suplex, and then wham, right in the nose. Like, that's the same thing that Randy Savage did to Tito Santana. So I can respect bringing back the classics, okay? But come on. You guys are killing me. And then he gets eliminated in a minute in front of the biggest audience that he's ever been in front of. Now, look, Joe Hendry's over the moon right now. He thinks the whole thing was great. He has, like, the most viewed video on WWE's Twitter account since WrestleMania. It's the most viewed Instagram reel. It's breaking records. Thankfully, WWE has not, as far as I know, not clipped the elimination and shown that everywhere. They've only shown the entrance. But man, it was that disappointing. I honestly don't get it. I don't understand it.
We got to look at this whole thing, right? WWE told their audience that Joe Hendry is a joke.
Yeah.
That's what they did. They said, this guy is a joke. And you mentioned the Tito Santana, Randy Savage finish from the night. It's the Intercontinental title match, 1985.
Yeah.
Who was that finish built to build?
Randy.
Finish was to get Randy the title and to define Randy Savage as the champion. Right, he was going to be a heel champion for the IC title. This finish, they used the same finish and built Frankie. Like, remember when you talk about Bruno? You know, Bruno did a lot. He fucking won.
Yeah,
Hulk Hogan did a lot when he was winning, when he was the champ. He fucking won.
Yep.
Like, when you have a top babyface, they win. Like, all you've done is just tell people he's not the guy. He's not the guy. He's just a joke, which I don't understand. I don't understand what you get. And again, you could think, like, I know Joe and Rich call him a jag, but I mean, like, for the TNA audience, he's a thing. But TNA guys are used to such bad fucking, I said it, bad fucking booking for decade upon decade. I said it. Then you accept this. Like, this doesn't matter that he lost. Yeah, it's why your company is what it is. Because of bad fucking booking and because you accept it. And you take it and you don't say, hey, this is fucking stupid. And that was fucking stupid.
It was beyond stupid. Nobody will ever be able to defend it. People have tried because they try to take up for TNA and they come at me in the comments. I had one guy, and this is just one guy, so I don't think this is a complete thing with the TNA audience, but I had one guy use the line, and I can't believe he said it. He said, well, wins and losses don't matter, Mike. You're too mad about this. And I'm like, bro, okay, well, then maybe he should just keep losing since they don't matter. And Bound for Glory is very likely going to be in the UK. And Joe Hendry is very likely to be in the main event of Bound for Glory up against Moose. I still think that's the direction. Because I'll be honest, JD, I don't think they're actively trying to sabotage him. I think they think that's good booking. I think they're building heat for a Hendry Kazarian match coming up at Slammiversary, where Hendry is going to overcome the odds and beat Kazarian of all people and then go on to face Moose at Bound for Glory. I think they think that that is good. Right. And that's the most disappointing thing, because they don't understand that it's bad. They just don't get it. Right. But somebody told me, it's like, well, wins and losses don't matter. Okay. Well, maybe Kazarian should beat Hendry at Slammiversary. And then maybe Hendry should just lose it in the UK since it doesn't matter. You moron. Of course, wins and losses matter. You need your top babyface to be strong. Now, look, not every babyface has to be that way. There are different types of babyfaces. Bryan Danielson can win and lose. He's essentially bulletproof at this point. He's a different kind of character. Joe Hendry is 6'2". He says 252 pounds. He's probably 240. But he's a big guy, muscular guy, and he very much looks and acts like a John Cena type, a young John Cena type, or not young. He's older than John Cena was when John Cena was coming up. But he could be that character, but they don't want him to be that. Instead, they keep him as a joke. They're just like, they're treating him like he's just another dude. And I think they're blowing it so far, but he is so charismatic. He's such a good promo. He's probably overcoming the bad booking, and he's probably still going to be over anyway. It doesn't need to be bad. They can just be good.
That's the problem, is like, we shouldn't have to have talent overcome bad booking all the time.
Yes.
We should just book good. You should just book guys well. You should just protect your top babyface. You should just have a guy, hey, we got a guy, let's build him. Because who else is the top babyface? Who else do you have?
Well, yeah, right now, like, the top babyface, if you're asking me right now, like, who is the biggest star in the company, it's Jeff Hardy. Just the problem is, I just don't think he's allowed to go to Canada. So it's like, you can't. Well, okay.
And that's the problem with Jeff Hardy, though, is like, again, AEW took a flyer on him, WWE took a flyer on him, both companies wound up regretting it.
Yeah.
Because he's still Jeff Hardy. Yeah. And now he's a 48-year-old Jeff Hardy. Is he going to be over? Yeah. He should just do tag stuff with Matt. He did not look, neither one of them looked good in the ring during their AEW run. And he's Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy will walk out there and let people eating out of his hand, because there's nobody with that type of charisma and presence.
Especially that TNA audience, they love that guy so much. Like, our buddy Andre, Patreon subscriber, shout out Andre, was there. He won't admit it, but I get the feeling he cried when he saw Jeff Hardy, because he was like 6 years old the first time he saw Jeff in TNA. And so, like, it was super important to him. Like, Jeff Hardy is awesome. Like, him and Matt are perfect for TNA. But, like, yeah, you know, you're right. Who else is that? Like, they got Josh Alexander. I think Mike Santana. That. I know, but you're right. They have done that. Mike Santana, maybe, as far as like over guys that's getting a reaction from the crowd, he's very much like right up there with Joe Hendry and Josh Alexander and those guys. Of course, they got Nick Nemeth. I think they're flipping Steve Macklin babyface, but they tried with Macklin and they failed with him before because guess what?
Because they can't.
They decided
book.
Not to put him. They had him lose to Alex Shelley. And what's Alex Shelley doing now?
That's a great question. What is Alex Shelley? Weren't the guns supposed to be going to AEW like 3 months ago? That's weird. That's the thing. They don't book well. They don't. Remember when they had Josh, when Josh got really hot, and they immediately had Moose job to Moose, and they did nothing with it for 6 months?
Well, yeah, but
no, that was That was bad, Mike. That was bad.
But I'm telling you, but the Rebellion match, the payoff in the end, I did like. I did like the Rebellion match that they did the following year.
Why did
they
hold?
They continued to tell the story.
Why did it have to be 6 months? Why did Scott D'Amore have to make the whole thing about him? Why did he make stupid? Why was it? I'm saying, okay. I'm not saying you got the result, but why did the booking have to be so bad and nonsensical?
I think you answered your own question. Why did Scott D'Amore have to make it about himself? Well, that's why Scott D'Amore is on the unemployment line right now.
Okay, fair, but they're still doing it. And that's the problem. It's like it doesn't matter. It's almost like it doesn't matter who's there. They shoot themselves in the foot when they get guys over. Like there was no reason. Why wasn't Josh mad the next fucking day? Why did we wait 6 months for him to finally get that match with Moose? I unplugged my headphones. It made absolutely no sense at the time. And like in retrospect, yeah, he eventually got it, but we had 6 months of like nothing with Boar. It didn't make any sense then. It doesn't make sense now. And Scott's actions made no sense in retrospect.
Yeah. None. Because Scott, I'm trying to remember exactly how it was going down, but Scott was like putting obstacles in Josh's way and they're both baby faces. He's like, I'm doing this. This is for your own good. Now, instead of getting Moose, you have to wrestle Jonah, which was an awesome match, by the way. But like, why did it happen?
That's the problem. Remember, we kept saying on Brace for Impact, I kept saying Scott's going heel. Everything Scott's doing makes total sense if he's protecting Moose. And then that makes sense.
What a time to be alive.
Dude, that was me every week on Brace for Impact, was I would try to make sense of that booking and just yell into the microphone when nothing made sense.
Yeah, and like three of those guys, well, Artie Evans and Jimmy Jacobs are now in AEW, and Will Ospreay is saying that he's Scott D'Amore in AEW too, so.
No.
But yeah, I didn't want to go on a long diatribe on TNA tonight because, dude, TNA dominated our YouTube last week. Good numbers, by the way. But
sometimes you got to go back to what works.
Yeah. Here, let's get to the chat here. I got some hazing going on. Nonzo says, Mike, you have fucking Dreamer in TNA booking. What did y'all expect?
Yeah. Ah, he's right.
Yeah. John Mew said a lot of bookers get sold on the idea that it's better to gain through losing. Like it proves something. Sometimes the right answer is to put the person over. So, okay. So that can be true in some sense. It depends on how the person loses. Frankie got the victory. Okay. They're probably building to a second match. I don't agree with it, but okay. I get it. Okay. If unfortunately right after that match, what they did is they shot an angle to have Kazarian wrestle a steal in Chicago. So it made it look like Ace Steel was the bigger baby face and Ace Steel was the hero and not Joe Hendry. And then you get to the battle royal, and what really should have happened, right? If they had their booking minds on, what really should have happened, because Joe Hendry should not have won that battle royal. He's not going to go fight the NXT champion. He's not going to do that, right? What should have happened is he should have eliminated Kazarian first. Kazarian's the heel, right? And then Kazarian sneaks back in later in the match whenever, you know, Hendry is on the final four. Hendry is distracted. Kazarian sneaks back in and then throws him over. And then now you've just shot an angle for a TNA show that you can connect over onto TNA, right? Like you shot it on NXT. But instead, what they did is Joe Hendry comes out. He trashes everybody in the Battle Royal. And then he gets in. Everybody attacks him like he's the heel. Now Joe Hendry is the heel in this scenario. And then fair and square, Kazarian dumps him out like he's a nobody. Like that's what happened, but instead, like they could have done a good angle, but they chose not to do it. They did a bad one.
Mike, did you expect WWE to book someone else's star well?
You would think if they were partners, but no.
It's like history tells me no, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, maybe somebody should write a article about that. I think
Someone does have a Patreon who needs articles.
Yeah. Let's see. Transferring. He said Matt's trying to get him and Jeff back in a WWE already. Yeah. Look, I don't think that WWE is going to take them back unless it's for a Hall of Fame induction.
I agree.
Which they can do while working for TNA, but they're very much not signing a TNA contract because they want to go back to WWE. Every like TNA is like that guy that like every girl that comes into his life doesn't want to be in a relationship. They go on a couple of dates. The next thing you know, that girl's in a relationship. That's the way it always happens with TNA. But look, TNA is a mid-sized company. Like that's kind of, you know, and I think TNA is important to the wrestling business. They feed the ecosystem, and it's really important for guys like Matt and Jeff to have a landing spot when they're on the downside of their career. I think it's awesome that they're in TNA, and they shouldn't sign a contract for more than a couple of years, because eventually they're going to want to go back to one of the bigger companies. But I think it's cool that we have a TNA where guys on the guys that are coming up and guys that are kind of on the downside of the career have a place to go and they can get regular money. I think TNA is cool for that stuff.
TNA is like a rebound chick.
Basically, King of North said Mike Santana. Honestly, King, you're wrong. You're 100% wrong. I know people don't like Mike Santana because he left AEW, and that's that hurts people's feelings. I get that. he wasn't happy in AEW. There's too many people at the top of that card. He wasn't going to break through it, so now he's trying somewhere else. He has been very good since he's been in TNA. He's been an impressive guy, and his promo work is great. And he's had they put out a documentary on him with George Barbosa from the Fight Network. It was really good. He comes off as just like a legit, like a guy you want to root for. So AEW fans, you're all wrong about Santana. DJ Convoy said, Mike, when you said Jeff was their biggest star, I laughed. Look, TNA is a small company, and Jeff could be a top star in like one of the more famous guys in any company right now. He was legitimately the top star in the business like 10 years ago or like 12 years ago when he was in WWE before he went back. Yeah, 15. Like he comes in immediately night one. He's the most famous guy there.
He is 100% their biggest star. Like he's Jeff Hardy. Yeah. Like say what you want. He's Jeff Hardy.
Yeah. If he goes to MLW, same thing. NWA, same thing. GCW, same thing. Anywhere outside of AEW and WWE, he is the biggest star. That's not an indictment on TNA. TNA is a small company. People got to stop comparing them to AEW and WWE. Mm-hmm. Illa said we got Josh and Jonah, but the rest was trash. Yeah. Absolutely. They just did Kaz and Ace Steel on TV in a street fight in Chicago. Chicago. I don't know if it was any guy. I haven't watched it yet. I haven't actually watched it yet. Hopefully it was good because I got to do a podcast about it later this weekend. Okay. Oh, you know what? We're overtime already, but we'll leave on this. Shane McMahon to AEW. Shit's going to be wild.
That's not what that said. That said he was – now, again, because – it's not written very clearly. It sounded like Shane McMahon was calling people up to come back to WWE. I don't know where this whole Shane McMahon to AEW thing comes from. It said he was
Conrad.
Calling guys. Yeah, but no, but he said that he was calling them to come back to WWE. He didn't say he was going to AEW. Like that's really.
I think Jim Ross said he wouldn't be surprised. Like nothing would surprise him at this point for him to show up in AEW. But I don't think that's happening. But I did see. Like in one of the Voices of Wrestling chats we're in, and I think I've seen it on Twitter, like a couple of people, not many people, but there are some people that are kind of like talking himself into how like that could be interesting. And I'm like, you guys, you're such homers. But anyway, guys, we got to get out of here because JD and I have some more recording to do. We got to go head over to the Patreon. So patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Head over there. We're going to do the Who Killed WCW. We got some stuff coming out. We're going to record some more content for you. Also, check out the JD's Kickstarter and become a Gaijin supporter today, everybody. Support Gaijin today. We'd greatly appreciate it. Just drop a 5-spot like I did, man. That's an easy way to help out the book.
$5 for an ebook.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that is going to do it for us this time. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no way. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game. Better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no way.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.